This is Purple Radio on demand.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Platinum Euros podcast. The tournament has finally kicked off after over an extra year of anticipation, with the first round of games happening in the past few days. Today we'll be chatting about the home nations and how they fared in their opening games. I'm joined by Tommy Isaacson.
Afternoon, James.
Johnny Tiplady.
Hello there.
And Callum Morley.
Pleasure to be here.
So let's start with England then. Overall thoughts on the performance and the result? I'll go to you first, Tommy.
I thought we were very good, actually, considering it was the opening game of a tournament. Having sat through that World Cup opener against Tunisia and the last Euros opener against Russia, in comparison, we were really, really good on Sunday. And obviously, it's an excellent result. Croatia should be the strongest side in our group other than us. I'm sure they weren't particularly impressive. But no, I think we can be really pleased. I think it's an excellent start.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a better way you can start it than a win against, as you say, probably the best side in the group, right?
Exactly, yeah. I think coming into it, there was quite a lot of people. I think we all thought that we sort of needed to win to get some confidence before going into that game with Scotland on Friday. But I think there was a lot of people, myself included, who were expecting a draw and expecting it to look a lot less fluid and a lot less polished than it did. So, no, really promising start.
Yeah, obviously a fantastic result. But in terms of the actual performance itself, what was most pleasing?
There were some pleasant surprises in the performance as well, I think. Some players who I think were a bit more peripheral actually stepped up to the plate and performed. You know, Calvin Phillips was my man of the match, Raheem Sterling getting the goal as well. I didn't expect him to start. But it shows that I think we have a lot more depth than maybe people realised initially. Performance-wise, I don't think you can really pinpoint many areas on the pitch that look specifically weak, although we weren't too tested, so maybe there's still an air of caution after the result as well.
Yeah, I think the one thing that stood out for me was just how controlled it was in terms of, I was at the game on Sunday and I don't think it ever felt like we were ever actually going to concede. Yeah, I can't really, there was the sort of first half, Croatia did come into it a little bit after the sort of the first 20, but it never felt like we were really sort of under pressure, and Southgate sort of finally sort of able to tweak it a little bit, and sort of second half we were by far the better team. We've mentioned Calvin Phillips, Callum, in terms of any other standout performances. I think obviously most people sort of have Phillips down as their man of the match, but did anyone else sort of stand out?
Well, I think, yeah, Phillips was perhaps, he was stand up for me, perhaps because there was so much talk around him coming into the lineup, whether Bellingham should be in there. It was a big pick from Southgate, but I think it was vindicated. Obviously, there's been a lot of hype surrounding Foden and Mount coming into the game and into the tournament. They're expected to be big hitters for England over the course, but I thought they were both very impressive in terms of midfield creativity, which is an area I think England has struggled in for a long, long time, actually. And it was nice that even I thought, Kyle Walker and Harry Kane perhaps were a bit more subdued in their performances when they've been kind of standout performers for England for a long time. It was nice to see some other people kind of step up to the plate and really take the game by the scruff of the neck, which, going back to what Isaacson said about kind of the showing the depth of the squad this year compared to previous tournaments that we've had, I thought was a real, real positive and a different kind of England performance than one we've seen in recent years.
Yeah, let's chat about Phillips then a little bit more, because I think, it was almost sort of universal in terms of people seeing him as the man of the match. Because he's been using that role before as sort of the number eight, sort of alongside Declan Rice. And he has looked a bit more uncomfortable in that. I think it's probably fair to say, particularly in sort of those March qualifiers, he looked a bit uncomfortable. It looked like he was sort of standing in for Jordan Henderson, waiting for Henderson to come back. But what exactly, Tommy, was it that sort of works for Phillips in that role? And is it something you think we'll see throughout the tournament, or is this sort of Southgate playing specifically to that Croatian midfield that is sort of so talented?
I think it's difficult to say whether that's Southgate tailoring it to Croatia or not. But if we think back to those March qualifiers, it was very much a case of Rice and Phillips looking like a defensive midfield pair, which we just did not need. Whereas on Sunday, it looked like Declan Rice playing as a holding midfielder, and Calvin Phillips had license to use that insatiable attitude for running and work ethic and the tackles. And he was really allowed to go and dictate the game, which is something completely different to what we saw in March, which is very much that Jordan Henderson role. Whether that was because we've looked at Croatia and gone, Kovacic and Brozovic, let's turn that into that running battle, that physical battle, because if we're going to play with two not particularly mobile holding midfield players, they're going to get all over it. Or whether that's just playing to that sort of Bielsa ball skill set that Phillips has developed. He's at his best when he's given that license to go and get into spaces that other central midfielders don't want to go into, that players don't want to follow him into. So I think that was what was impressive. He was, every time you looked up and every time England were involved in those 50-50, Calvin Phillips just seemed to be there. He was absolutely everywhere. Summed up by the assist, really, because he's popped up in sort of what we all kind of now know as that De Bruyne channel, just sort of right at the penalty area, 30 yards out to play a perfect through ball into Sterling. So yeah, I think that would be it for me. That would be what I would highlight. It was just he took a role that back in March was second holding midfielder and very much turned into all action number eight. It was fantastic to see.
Yeah, I think he definitely saw him sort of breaking lines a little bit more than before. I read a piece in The Athletic where by Michael Coxon saying Calvin Phillips hasn't never been called offside for Leeds ever, or sort of in the Premier League. And obviously he was caught offside on Sunday just because he was end up making those runs beyond Harry Kane. Let's chat about Harry Kane then. For all the positives, I think, you know, and he sort of went in as one of the world's best strikers, and obviously one performance doesn't stop him being that. But I think most people, Johnny, would probably agree that Kane's performance was a bit underwhelming.
Yeah, at times he did cut quite a frustrated figure, I think. He does, or for Spurs especially, but I think we're seeing more and more for England, he does like to drop deeper and get more involved in play. And he couldn't quite do that. I think the lines were quite cut in that kind of final third, De Bruyne area, where you want the final ball to come from. He couldn't quite get a foot on the ball. Didn't really have many of the chances you'd want to come to in the penalty box either. I don't think we really got the ball in many crossing kind of situations. Overall, yeah, we just didn't really play in a way that could bring him into the game, I don't think.
Yeah, I think there's definitely times where he got a bit lost, and I don't know what the, I mean, perhaps open up what the solution is to that. You know, I think having someone with the ability of Kane as a number nine to drop deep, I don't think many other at the minute do it better than him in terms of that, you know, his passing ability, most assists in the Premier League this season. But I think there was sort of that lack of running in behind when Kane vacated that spot. And I don't know if perhaps that was the thinking behind Sterling, who was perhaps that surprise pick, and maybe that was the reasoning, sort of the logic behind that. But I don't know if it quite worked on Sunday.
Well, I feel like, especially if you have Mason Mount playing in that 10 role behind as well, he has so much energy to provide for the midfield going forward. I feel like if you try and mix him and Kane, similarly to what we discussed the other day about Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips perhaps doing a similar role defensively, if we have Mason Mount and Harry Kane both trying to get on the ball in a very similar area, it can, I think, create a kind of creative fracture. So I think we do need to kind of just give him a specific role up forwards. He's not normally the kind of man who will who make the runs forward going, kind of like a Jamie Vardy-esque striker, who perhaps we don't really have that much at the moment. But I think it depends on who's playing behind him as well.
Yeah, I think he did sort of cut a somewhat isolated figure for a while. And perhaps that is something that Grealish potentially comes into, especially when we think about Scotland with sort of back three, but we'll get onto that a little bit later. Mentioned Grealish, mentioned Sterling, Callum. Probably the surprise selection. I think very few people were, you know, there was a lot of clamour for Grealish, but a lot of it was often over. People thought it might be Rashford. Very few people probably thought Raheem Sterling. Do you think Southgate got it right?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to say that he got it right. I think Sterling vindicated his performance, and the goal showed that, like what we were saying about the runs in behind, that is something that perhaps Rashford, you know, you can't necessarily, Rashford or Grealish would have been in the same position to do that, or would have scored it. And I think kind of a defining feature of Southgate's management in more recent months is loyalty to his key figures, you know, Sterling, Walker, Trippier, those kind of players who were there for him in 2018 and who have, he's usually stuck by them, kind of even when Sterling has had a probably subpar domestic season. So I think, yeah, I think Sterling kind of earned his place. I don't think it was a standout performance. I think he is still capable of a bit more. And I know kind of Grealish is the people's princess of the England team at the moment. But, you know, I think you'd be harsh to bring in Grealish just for the sake of it on the back of that, those performances when, as I said earlier, you know, it wasn't necessarily that Kane was carrying us. I think it was Sterling, Mount and Foden really who made us look like a better offensive force.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you in the sense of, you know, the goal doesn't necessarily hide over the fact there were a few chances that he wasted. I remember sort of him ballooning a horrendous volley in quite a good position. And you just sort of thought, oh, that sort of summed up Raheem Sterling's sort of Premier League season a little bit. But yeah, I know. I think definitely in terms of in the first half, in that first 20 minutes where we looked really, really good, there seemed to be the sort of overload on the left-hand side where Mount was really, really sticking wide. And then Trippier, who we'll chat about a little bit now, was sort of part of this plan to sort of feed balls through. We mentioned sort of Sterling was the shock, but I suppose another one was Trippier at left back. When we've got two perfectly fine left backs in Chilwell and Shaw. Tommy, did it work for you? And would you do it again? Or do you think we'll do it again against Scotland?
Yeah, well, I think there was a team that got leaked early in the morning. And at that point, when we all realised it was going to be Trippier at left back, Rice and Phillips, Raheem Sterling was going to play, the whole country seemed to go into meltdown. Trippier at left back seemed like an incredibly odd decision, but I think it did work. I think we benefited from his assuredness on the ball throughout the game. He's got a good working relationship with Walker and Stones, who he's played alongside before. And that helped Tyrone Mings slot in really, really well. That was very impressive on Sunday, I thought. I think there's an element of Trippier being in there because Maguire isn't. We lose a lot of that communication, the experience, the leadership. I think those were the three words Southgate used before kickoff about Trippier, actually. So I think there's an element of that which makes me think going into a game with Scotland, the three of the things that would be the most important to me in a game with them would be experience, leadership and communication. So I suspect Trippier probably will play again on Friday night. And I don't think I'd have a major problem with that, to be honest. I don't believe in shaking up a back four when it starts to work. And as we said earlier, none of us could think of a major chance Croatia created in the game, which suggests to me that the back four functioned well as a unit and played well. There's always going to be question marks about having a right-footed right-back playing left-back when we have Shaw and Chilwell available. And the second it goes wrong, I'm sure there's going to be thousands of people springing to the barricades to tell us how wrong our Southgate's been. But for now, I don't like breaking defences that are working quite nicely, so I would stick with them.
Yeah, I think it seems to be sort of a theme now, doesn't it? Sort of this experience sort of spine of, you look at someone like Walker in there alongside Trippier, Kane, even sort of Pickford now, who's sort of the few that have played in a major tournament before, you sort of forget that with all the sort of the new young players we have, they were sort of stepping out at Wembley at a major tournament. It's probably, you know, quite something to sort of deal with. Let's look ahead to Scotland then, the Scotland game. If you were Gareth Southgate, all three of you, what sort of changes would you potentially make, if any at all, and sort of why, really? I'll go to Johnny.
That's a tough one, because I think the only man I'd say was a real kind of weak link in the side was probably Kyle Walker, just because going forward he was sloppy on the ball. Defensively, he was perfectly sound, and the left-hand side was where Scotland was strongest against the Czech Republic, which is where I'm torn, because when Andy Robertson gets space on the left-hand side, especially when he's playing that wing-back role, dangerous things will happen. I think Phil Foden suffered from the fact that Kyle Walker struggled to kind of play it out. I think Foden was a bit isolated because of that. We didn't really get to see him as much, apart from that chance in the first half. I don't know. Changes, I feel it went perfectly fine already, to be honest, and I'd probably more make changes just to kind of experiment a bit, really.
Callum?
Yeah, I think I'd probably agree with that. I think I'd stick with probably what we've got. There wasn't enough evidence there to suggest major changes, and I don't think any of the subs who came on really laid a claim to be broken into the 11. I think, you know, if we get the 3 points against Scotland, then that's kind of, the group is pretty much in our hands at that point. So it's not really the time to start experimenting, you know, and especially when the experiments Southgate did make in the first game, and as we spoke about with Phillips, kind of worked, it's probably no reason not to change. I think there is a bit of a danger with if Tierney's back for Scotland come Friday, that left hand is going to become even more dangerous with his kind of overlapping thing with Robertson on the inside channel. But I think, again, that's just going to be kind of something tactically looked at rather than personnel necessarily.
Yeah, let's chat about Scotland then. Played on Monday against the Czech Republic, lost 2-0 at Hampden. For context, my dad's Scottish and texted me when he was sort of watching the game that was sort of typical old Scotland, really. Because feel free to disagree, but I think they actually played quite well despite losing 2-0, Tommy. It was actually quite a good performance.
Yeah, I would say they weren't awful. I would say it's an absolutely terrible result. And the Czech Republic were a lot worse than I thought they would be. I thought they were very, very average and didn't really offer an awful lot in the game. The first goal they scored is a very good cross that should never be allowed to get put in. Obviously, Soufal is always a threat out on that right channel. And from a second phase of a set piece, if you're leaving him in that kind of space, you're asking for trouble. And then the second goal is just a complete freak. It's fantastic, but you can't really count that as a mark against Scotland. I would say that they had a few players who struggled to make the step up to a major tournament. Look at O'Donnell at right wing back, Dykes up front, missed an absolutely huge chance at 1-0. And if he scores that and the shit wonder goal doesn't happen and it finishes 1-1, then we probably go, yeah, Scotland deserved their point. I'm not sure if that's a compliment to Scotland, to be honest. I think that's more of an insult to the Czech Republic. I thought neither side really did enough to win the game. And for me, Andy Robertson was Scotland's best attacking player in the game. And for all he is their best footballer, he's still, to have your left back as your main outlet, it seemed to be that the game would get built up on the right. They would come within the second of giving the ball away, scramble the ball out to the left-hand side and then put a cross in. And that was about the extent of the threat they were offering. If I was Scotland, I would be quite concerned with that. I struggle to see how they make it out of the group from here, to be honest.
It's certainly an uphill battle now, because I think if you were picking how the fixtures fell, you'd probably want it to be the other way around, and you don't want to be going to Wembley against England needing a win. Callum, though, I think did sort of Steve Clarke get it wrong? I mean, you know, as much as we sort of said they were unlucky and they sort of played okay, were there mistakes made in perhaps selection or the way that Scotland set up?
I think not playing McGregor in midfield was quite a big call from Steve Clarke, and there was, considering we saw quite a lot of kind of similar lineups in the build-up to the year. There was a few changes, but it is a tricky one because, as Tommy's just said, they had about three or four really good chances start of the second half, where I thought they played really kind of some decent stuff with McGinn in midfield. And you know, if one or two of those chances go in, you probably say he gets it right. So it is a tricky one to say. I think there will be changes come the England game. I think Che Adams looked really good when he came on, and he was another, you know, probably a name you would expect to have seen in the lineup. So I think he has got to make changes because there were players who he did kind of throw his hat in with who didn't kind of necessarily vindicate it. But it is a tough one. I think it was really a case of, you know, the Czechs were a kind of seasoned European Championship side by this point, and the experience showed, you know, they did look solid. They saw the game out pretty well. They had a good few chances by the end of it, and it was a difference between the kind of playing well and winning well, I think.
Yeah, I think the Czech Republic will be very pleased with sort of 3 points from what was a sort of pretty average performance. We mentioned Che Adams, Johnny, sort of did make quite a difference, especially because sort of with just Lyndon Dykes quite isolated up front, Scotland seemed to be playing quite direct, and it didn't really seem to create that much against sort of what was quite a robust Czech defence. Could we, you know, is that sort of because Kieran Tierney, there was no Kieran Tierney, you sort of lack that sort of player to bring the ball out of defence? Or is it something that actually we think, well, looking towards the head of the England game, you know, maybe you target someone like John Stones, get them into a bit of a physical battle because you're not going to beat them technically. Actually, we might not see a revert, you know, we might not see a move away from what we saw on Monday.
Yeah, because as we've seen in, I mean, in the March qualifiers as well, but just in recent times, John Stones, while he's had a terrific season, put him under pressure and he will make a mistake or two. And I think playing direct is the way to try and force that, getting the ball kind of into the box as much as you can. They won't, well, as an England fan, I'm hoping they're not going to have much possession, so they'll want to try and work it in as fast as they can, which as a defender means less time to think, less time to react, and just more opportunity to have that kind of lapse in concentration that can lead to a chance at the back. So, yeah, it's interesting. I think Che Adams is more of a player who, he's very good holding the ball up, making a chance from, well, with the ball at his feet, just trying to kind of break out, holding a defender off. We could see that later on. We could see that in the kind of second half if it's not going so well for them. But I think direct possibly is the way to go, because we've not, as of yet, from the Croatia game, we still didn't really see much kind of direct play from Croatia. We didn't see much pressure on the back line, I don't think.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I think Steve Clarke will have to make changes. We mentioned O'Donnell. You'd imagine Nathan Patson will come in for O'Donnell. He looked sort of very sort of subpar. And potentially, I mean, Scott McTominay, sort of bizarrely, sort of a Manchester United player, looked sort of pretty average and ineffectual in midfield. We might, you know, perhaps he has played as a centre back in the qualifiers, as sort of a back three. So perhaps we'll see something like that. And that sort of creates that room for McGregor to come in. Ryan Christie again looked a little bit sort of isolated. But we'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting again, though, as well, because I think with Scotland, even though, I mean, Tommy, you said perhaps it'll be difficult for them to qualify now, but there is a potential that 3 points will get you out of the group. And even if Scotland lose against England, which is probably on paper anyway, the most likely result, I mean, Croatia looked pretty average on Sunday. I don't, you know, is there a potential that Scotland could go to Croatia? It'll be at Hampden with qualification on the line, and they can actually potentially do a job?
Yeah, there's 100% a chance that that can happen. As we said, Croatia were not very impressive. We all thought they would be a lot better than they were. Croatia will be looking at their game with the Czech Republic as being very important. I think the Czechs, well, in the Czechs' minds, they're probably just about through now. As you say, 3 points probably does it. And Croatia will be looking at them, knowing that they didn't quite hit the heights that they would have expected on Monday. So that's a game between two teams that need to get going. If Croatia had beaten the Czech Republic, I'd expect them to turn up at Hampden and be feeling quite confident of beating them. Because as we've sort of touched on there, I think Scotland just have too many deficiencies all around the pitch. There's too many players where you look at them and you go, you're just not quite good enough to play at this level. And we're talking about bringing Che Adams in as if that's a major improvement. I think it is an improvement, but Che Adams is still can't score more than about 10 Premier League goals in his career. We're not talking about a fantastic player who's going to really change things that much. He might make them better, but I still don't think he gives them enough. So yes, of course, they can beat Croatia. I wouldn't be expecting it, though. I didn't think they were great, and I don't think they can get a whole lot better, to be honest.
Yeah, certainly an element of it all needs to go perfect on the night for Scotland, unfortunately. Anyway, depending on your perspective, it didn't quite go that way, along with sort of that freak goal by Patrick Schick. Let's chat about Wales then. Played on Saturday, was it now? Feels like a long time ago. Against Switzerland in sort of an eerily quiet Baku, which is a bit bizarre, considering sort of Italy were playing on the Friday in sort of a Stadio Olimpico with sort of fans, and it was sort of two sides in sort of the far east of Europe with very, very few fans who were bothered. I mean, I saw it as quite a poor Welsh performance and probably quite lucky to nick a draw. Is that a fair assessment, Johnny?
Yeah, I think we didn't see as much from the players who you'd think are their star players. Gareth Bale barely got into the game. Aaron Ramsey was almost as quiet as well. I think they were lucky to get a point. They did invite a lot of pressure in the first half, and they kind of, defence was very, very, very deep. So it just invited more from that Switzerland team. I did see some positives, though. I think they've got a lot about them aerially, and I think their goal from Kiefer Moore was nicely worked short corner. And I think if they can get that right defensively as well, because obviously in Bolo's game, a goal came from a corner. If they can sort their set pieces out, I think that could hold the key to possibly sneaking a third place. Maybe, I mean, it's quite an open group, so who's to say they couldn't get second place?
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how they got on against Turkey, who I think were sort of very underwhelming as they sort of became everybody's dark horses to the extent that they were no longer dark horses. Callum, though, look at Wales. I mean, I think one thing was sort of this complete inability to hold on to the ball. I think in this tournament so far, especially because it's at the end of a very long season, and I mean, it's very hot at the minute. The teams that seem to have done the best are those that simply are just able to retain possession. And I think, Wales really struggled with that. Is that something that, looking ahead at Turkey and Italy, they need to perhaps work on? Or is it actually worth embracing the more direct route with Kiefer Moore and just looking to play on the counter-attack?
It's tricky, really, because you'd say probably their best strategy on paper with kind of Dan James and Gareth and Kiefer Moore as a front three is, you know, they're always going to have that pace against whatever team they play. But it is kind of, I think, shaping up to be quite a cagey tournament because, like you said, the fatigue, the heat, we're not seeing high-scoring, high-chance games. We're seeing a lot of kind of moments where quality is shining through. And against, I thought Italy were very good in possession against Turkey. So is a midfield of kind of Joe Allen. I know we call him the Welsh Pirlo, but when you're against a country with the real Pirlo, it's going to be a struggle. Are they really going to boss the midfield? Or I think you do have to find other routes. But I think compared to what we were saying about Scotland in terms of do they have kind of real star quality in enough areas, I think with Wales you probably could get away with it, even if it is a strategy, if you kind of pass it to Bale and see what happens. But I thought Dan James was quite impressive, actually, and he was fuming when he came off kind of just after the goal went in. And he was rightly so, I thought. He looked like he had real kind of danger and menace on the boys. He gets a bit of press as a bit of a speed merchant and nothing else. But I thought he was putting in some really dangerous crosses. And I think, you know, they weren't far away, Wales, in moments. And if they can just kind of dot the I's and cross the T's, then anything can happen, really.
Yeah, it's perhaps an element of working on transition, because I thought when they did win the ball back, a lot of the time the passes were quite awry. And there's a few times you could sort of, it looked like to be able to release a Dan James or a Gareth Bale, and suddenly the balls were a little bit loose. And, you know, especially against Italy in particular, you're not really going to be able to get away with that. Perhaps with Turkey, Turkey looked even worse on the ball than Wales, and obviously they were playing Italy. But let's chat about Kiefer Moore then. I suppose is sort of the one of the players who really came away with sort of a higher stock than he entered the game with. Tommy, is he the key man now? I mean, we've spoken about sort of Gareth Bale, and I mean, we haven't even mentioned Aaron Ramsey yet, but, you know, is it sort of an element, a case of get those balls into the box, hit it long, potentially go a little bit more direct rather than sort of counter-attacking, and he's going to be, you know, if Wales are going to do anything, it's going to have to go through Kiefer Moore?
Yeah, Moore does come out with a better stock than he started with, as you said. But to me, he still looked very isolated for a lot of it. I think part of the stock that goes up is because he had to battle so much with just so little help. And you said we didn't mention Aaron Ramsey. I think that's pretty much justified. The commentators hardly mentioned Aaron Ramsey. And to me, the thing that worries me with Wales is we talk about them going direct. I couldn't pin down really what the plan was on Saturday. They seemed just tactically a little bit clueless. Because they started really well. They knocked the ball out really well in the first 5 minutes. And then by minute 10, they seemed to have conceded all initiative on the game. They had no way of adapting to Mbolo running straight through the middle of their centre halves, which happened 3 or 4 times. That's just easy for a player like that, once he realised he could do it, to just get it. The only real successful outlet they seemed to have was James, particularly once Sharon and Babu had been booked. And it seemed from the moment that Shah had been booked, they didn't put another ball over his head for the rest of the game. Things like that worry me. Because then if you're going, we're going to go direct into Moore because that's a strength, because Kiefer Moore is going to beat almost any centre-half in the air. He's an absolute physical monster. We can say that all we like, but if we then don't have the tactical nous to execute that, it's not going to get them anywhere. So that's what really worried me about Wales, is they just seem to have no clue. And it was summed up for me in about a 10-minute spell going into before they scored, where there was some subs warming up and they had the ball and they were basically just knocking it sideways as if they were just waiting for something to happen, waiting for someone else to tell them what to do. The lack of sort of seizing initiative and maybe being in that sort of cavernous, empty Baku, as you said at the start, maybe that was part of it. To me, it shouldn't be. It's a major championship. But yeah, I thought they were very lucky to come out with a point, and we can say they can go direct, but I'm not sure that they quite knew how to execute that on the day.
Is it perhaps an element then? I mean, obviously this is out of the control of the Welsh players and Rob Page, but obviously with the upheaval they've had off the pitch with the whole Ryan Giggs situation and sort of there's been sort of a bit of a change of system. I know a lot of times Harry Wilson had played in a false nine and Kiefer Moore's only played a handful of times for Wales, despite quite a good record. But is it now that this is sort of catching up on them? When you look at Scotland, obviously didn't work out for them, but they've been working on this system for 18 months, best part of 2 years now, with the three at the back and Kieran Tierney as this marauding centre-back. But for Wales, it's been a bit of a sort of a hodgepodge sort of situation where they've tried to scrabble something together for the major tournament. And actually now against, you know, seasoned opposition like Switzerland, and probably you'll see it against Turkey and Italy, that's going to get caught out, Johnny.
Yeah, it's, even though it's been, like you say, they've been working on it for quite a while, it's still quite an alien tactic. We didn't really see it much in the Premier League until Sheffield United kind of did a similar thing with the kind of with ball docking people overlapping stuff in centre back. It's still quite hard, I think, to get a grip on as a footballer. I think it's very inviting as an attacking team, just instantly seeing that kind of formation. You're almost thinking, we need as many people behind the ball. We're not really going to get that much, but if we have the pace, then we'll take you on the counter-attack. That's about it. I think that's what you'll see as an opposing team. You'll think that's probably the only threat we'll have to deal with.
And then finally, Callum, then looking ahead to sort of the Turkey game, which feels quite a bit of a crunch match now for both sides in terms of particularly Turkey, sort of you need those 3 points. What sort of Rob Page looking at in terms of changing compared to the Switzerland game, where, you know, I think we're all sort of agreed it didn't really work and they sort of came away having sort of nicked a point quite undeservedly?
Yeah, well, I think, as we say, you know, they get 4 points and then it's a very different story for them. So if they can get it, it's really, okay, it is a crunch game. I think they've really got to go for it. They've got to find some finesse in, like Tommy was saying, in getting some kind of system going forward, building up to their forward players. But Turkey, you know, they'll look at the Turkey-Italy game and think they've got a decent chance. Their Turkish players are there for the taking, and where, you know, they might struggle in possession against the Italian team. Turkey really didn't, they couldn't hold onto the ball for very long. So a bit of attacking quality and kind of, I think, a bit more confidence going forward. I think there was a certain element of fragility to the Welsh defence. They did look a bit suspect every time it was kind of coming in towards them. I thought kind of Joe Rodon did quite well in aspects, but other times, you know, the Swiss, you know, right, they nearly lost it at the depth, and that was, they lost two-headed balls in a row. But a bit more confidence going forward, you're kind of having that belief that something is going to happen, and that's probably going to be decided quite early on in the game. You know, that was what was disappointing for me, is that they did play so well in the first 5 minutes this time, and that kind of fell away. But I think there is the quality there. They've just got to really kind of go for it, that know that that's the game to win, and then we're talking about a very different team.
Yeah, it does feel like a very large game. I don't think Wales want to be travelling to Rome needing 3 points or even a point, to be honest with you. But you'd imagine 4 points would just about do it. But I think that wraps it up for today. I think we've gone through all of the home nations now. Obviously, no qualification from Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland. And it's sort of a case of two stories, isn't it? England looking very sort of solid, almost certain to qualify. But for Scotland and Wales, these next two games are pretty big in terms of deciding whether they get through. This has been another episode of the Palatinate Euros podcast, the first after we've actually had some games to chat about. There'll be more coming, looking at both home nations throughout the rest of the tournament, hopefully all the way to the final. and looking at all of the other games that are going on that don't involve England, Scotland and Wales. So make sure to tune in. Ben, cut that when you're listening to this. So make sure to check out all our social medias and all the channels for podcasts and written articles online. And see you all next time.
Purple Radio Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.